Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I was out this morning and doing my little jog along Lake Monona and looking out sort of enviously at a number of folks who were already out at about 6 o'clock in the morning in their boats. Some were waiting, but all were fishing. And I was really glad to know that I was having my old friend Gary Engberg join us today to talk about fishing in the summertime season. He's a professional tournament angler, fishing guide, avid conservationist, and sportsman. He advocates for getting youngsters involved in the outdoors. He's got a blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. Gary, great to have you back. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Larry. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you. How's the fishing?
Fishing has been pretty good. It's been a pretty good year. I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, up and down weather where we've got fronts coming through. But overall, you know, water levels, like I live on the Wisconsin River, have been very good for, you know, for fishing. We haven't had real low water levels, so people have been able to get around pretty good. Fishing has been a good, and about anyone I talk to, and you're talking about how I'm an advocate of getting children involved in fishing. Well, a new program was started this year by McFarland's in Sauk Prairie. They started a seniors fishing day where anyone over 60 years of age could show up at their establishment, and they had a bus ready and everything, even equipment if you didn't have it anymore. And they took 40 individuals or seniors over to fish in Crystal Lake to fish for the day and then have a fish fry. And, you know, we spend so much time taking our children out, you know, for all the children programs that are involved, which are great, and we need to get kids involved in the outdoors. But there's so many seniors that have, you know, were fishing, and maybe they lost their fishing partner past, or they moved, or, you know, something has happened and they don't get on the water anymore. Well, we're trying to get them back on the water.
Oh, that's a wonderful. Boy, would that be fun. To have a group like that, you can imagine the probably for a lot of them, lots of great stories.
Oh, they ended up catching fish it was a nice day. They, you know, they caught a fair amount of fish, and the fish were cleaned right away, and a great fish fry. But these people were waiting in line, you know, a half an hour before they were supposed to leave with their tackle boxes and their fishing hats and telling stories already. And whether or not they caught any fish, I mean, I know that the feedback I have, and I was there for most of the day, was fantastic. And it's good to get these people, because, you know, so many of them do lose their partners or do lose access, you know, to waters, and have, you know, fishing used to be a part of their life, and it still should be. I mean, fishing is an activity that you could do forever.
You're absolutely right, and I'm really glad to hear about that. I somehow did not see that, and I'm glad to sort of bring it up, because you kind of hope that maybe others will take up that idea in other parts of the state.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I'm not to take anything away from children's programs.
Sure.
Because they're going to be with us for a long time, and you have to get children involved in, you know, in fishing and the outdoors at an early age if they're going to really get hooked on it and it's going to become a part of the things they do. I mean, children have to have computer skills, but they still have to have plenty of outdoor time, and you know, getting them involved in fishing is great. And I think there's the O'Hara Fishing Club in Madison has been around, I think, for almost 50 years, and they had a program, in June that I was involved in over at Warner Park, where they gave out, I think, over 300 rods and reels and various, you know, fishing equipment pieces to anyone who showed up. They had plenty of club members there to show them, you know, how to fish. There's a fair number of fish up in Warner Park lagoons. You know, you can fish right from shore.
Yep.
And then they had a hot dog lunch for them and a little program. But it's, you know, I mean, when you get, you know, 300, 400, 500 people show up for an event, I mean, that's great. And you're getting a lot more people, you know, involved in that activity that we love so much.
Gary Engberg, our guest today, professional tournament angler, fishing guide. He's got a blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com, and always great to have him come by to talk about fishing. You may have a question about fishing this time of the year, where to go, what to do, what to use, or maybe you've got a great fishing story to tell. And I tell you what, I always like a good fishing story.
There's always good fishing stories. And they get better as the years go by.
Yeah, they sure do. And the number to call for you to join in, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. I was telling Cheyenne Lentz, our producer, just before the show, I said how I caught 90 inches of muskie in two casts. And she was quite impressed. The best part of that was I was fishing with my dad. And
yep.
And that
you won't find people that will have the greatest stories of my mentor in fishing was my grandfather, was an immigrant from Sweden whose father was a commercial fisherman. But it probably, my dad was involved in athletics, but not so much in the outdoors. And it probably wasn't for my grandfather, you know, and I still have pictures and stories that I look at now and then, and they bring back, you know, great memories.
Oh, they really do. And again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Catching these days right now, what's good right now? Bluegill fishing should
bluegill
be...
Bluegill fishing, they're coming off the beds or still on, maybe in some cases. I know that Lake Monona, your lake, has been very, very good for
yeah.
bluegills. All the Madison lakes have been good right now. I mean, it's on Mendota, there's been a very good out on Dunn's Bar, Burley Street Bar. The smallmouth bass bite has been fantastic. Smallmouth bass have just... you know, picked up, and I don't know if their reproduction has been great. There's got to be a fantastic population of them. You know, there's, you know, 7 to 8 pound smallmouth bass now in the Madison chain, and you have a great largemouth population, too, of big fish. The northern pike fishery in the Madison chain, particularly on Mendota, which is managed for northern pike, has been very good. It's hard to get a lot of the fish of legal size, but there's plenty of action out there. And all the Madison chain lakes, with the exception of maybe Wingra, have a very good walleye population with a minimal amount of reproduction.
Great to have those tips. And you get around. You fish all over the place, don't you?
Yeah, we still get around. We get around. I was on Winnebago a little over a week ago. Mercury had their national, they have a national tournament for all the Mercury pros and local people, and it, you know, it's a two-man team tournament. It fills up in a couple of days, and, you know, they take 350 teams, and you're allowed to fish the whole Winnebago system, which is, you know, Lake Winnebago itself is almost 30 miles long and 10, 12 miles wide. And then you have the river going up to the upper lakes of Winneconne, Poygan, and Butamore. And all of these territory, you know, is involved. You could fish any of these waters. But two-day tournament, and the population is they took away the minimum size limit of walleyes on Lake Winnebago, and actually has helped the fishery. It used to be hard there to catch legal fish, which was 15 inches, but now there's no size limit. People can catch those 13, 14-inch fish, which, you know, they used to catch so many of, and there seems to be a lot more fish in the 20s.
Ah, very interesting. Tom in Morton has a question for you, so let's go there. Tom, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
I had the privilege to be up in the Turtle Flambeau Flowage last week, and the mayfly hatch was on, and we couldn't buy a bite.
That's tough. You'll find a lot of times when you do have a good mayfly bite, if you do catch a fish like a walleye, you'll find, like, gobs of mayflies, a big ball of them in them, and it's one of the toughest times of fish there is if there's a hatch going on.
Well, can you tell me roughly how long the hatch lasts?
I can't tell you explicitly, but usually it's a week or so at least.
Yeah.
You know, and they can get very, very sick. I mean, I've been on Lake Mille Lacs in Minnesota where actually you have to turn on your headlights.
Oh, yeah. We were watching broods of geese and ducks feeding on the water without moving.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing.
Yeah.
I've been on Lake Winnebago, and when they had a hatch, and Lake Winnebago has such a great sturgeon population now, and we send sturgeon all over the country. But to have a, you know, a 5, 6, 7 foot sturgeon porpoise next to you chasing mayflies kind of makes you almost jump out of the boat. Now, there's a good story.
Do you have any hot tips for fooling the fish beyond the hatch?
Match the hatch.
Okay.
Try and find something that looks similar. A lot of times, you know, keep moving around. You might find different concentrations in different parts of the lake. You know, I don't know the scientific name for the bug it is that comes up. You know, Winnebago has a big mud bottom in the main lake there, and it's the bugs that hatch. And actually, in your electronics, you can watch the fish as they hatch, and the bugs start moving up to the surface.
And I love the Turtle Flambeau Flowage. That's a wonderful place to fish. A lot of musky fishing there, and also walleye. The walleye fishery there is...
That's a very good area.
Very good area.
Well, that's what they claim. We couldn't prove it.
Well...
Just the wrong time.
Thanks a lot for calling. If you're on the Turtle Flambeau Flowage, I recommend yellow as a color.
Okay.
That's a very good color on the Turtle Flambeau Flowage, at least for me.
Well, most flowages, you do have darker stained water, so something that shows up relatively, you know, a brighter color like that usually does work well.
Yeah. Marty in Eau Claire. Hi, Marty.
Hey there. I'm a teacher. I teach summer school fishing class in Barron, Wisconsin.
Oh.
So in the first 2 weeks of August, I have 15 kids to take fishing, and it's around Barron Rice Lake area, and it's the worst time of year to take them fishing because we have to shore fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you have any advice as to where we could go or what I should fish with to help the kids be successful.
Well, how old are the kids, by the way, roughly?
They're kindergarten through fourth grade, so they're little ones.
So they're just beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they are. Some of them.
I'll tell you, an idea would be to talk to your DNR, your fish biologist in the area, and probably find an area or there may be even ponds, you know, in the area that are stocked, you know, expressly for that purpose. You know, I would double check with them because they should be able to help you out or tell you places where you at least, you know, with when you're dealing with kids, especially younger children, it's not so important to catch a certain, you know,
big size. No, it's the kind of, you know, we're going to talk some more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news and then we'll come back to that. Stay with us. Talking summer fishing with Gary Engberg, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along. Gary, a professional tournament angler, fishing guide, has a blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. And always great to have him with us. And Gary, before our news break, we had a caller from the Barron area.
And we were saying that it's especially with young children, it's very, very important not so much that they catch a certain species or a certain size fish, just as long as they have something tugging on their line. And that's the important. It can be a rough fish, a carp, or something you might look down at and consider an inferior fish. Those kids just want something pulling on their line.
So, and I like your advice about checking out the DNR.
There's a lot of, I mean, the DNR has a lot of different, you know, things out there, and the best thing to do is contact them. I mean, they even have various areas. They'll even loan you equipment, you know, fishing equipment to get out there and use. So, I mean, they're a very good resource, and I think they should be used a lot more.
Let's turn to Nancy in Grafton next. Hi, Nancy.
Well, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. I have a daughter and son-in-law and two little granddaughters that live up in Sitka, Alaska. Well, about a week ago, my son-in-law, who has he's a fisheries biologist for the U.S. Forest Service, and he has his own boat with a cabin on and so forth, and he and his buddy were out in the ocean fishing. Well, I guess they went over a swarm of what my daughter says are called candlefish, and this whale came and went underneath his vessel, and after the candlefish and tilted the boat really quite seriously. My son-in-law was hanging on the rail, and he said, I was looking right down into the eye of the whale. And he was so scared. He was so scared. When they came back home, he told my daughter, you know, and she says, a couple times during the day, she said, Terry, I've got my eye on you. And he didn't like that too well. But my little granddaughters. I got these two little granddaughters, and the oldest one is now 8 years old. She has already been, they go out fishing all the time in the ocean, and Greta has already caught a huge, huge halibut. And these kids are, they love this land up there, and they really know fishing.
Well, that's a great story, isn't it, Gary?
Yep, I'll tell you. And the one thing that, when I was young, I was musky fishing with my grandfather, and I probably was 5, 6 years old, and he had a large musky, you know, follow up his bait to the boat, and, you know, probably, you know, a 4-foot fish or something like that. And I'll tell you, for years afterwards, I was a little scared to go in a boat because I'd never seen a fish so big.
Well, that's a great story, and I tell you what, when you do, I've seen some big fish that way, big muskies that way as well, and you it does give you a little bit of a start when they suddenly there's, you know, a 4-foot long fish right next to your boat.
And I can imagine being in Alaska where you're seeing, you know, something as big as what the
a
one
whale
we're talking about. You know, that's a little bit different. We don't have to worry about that. I've had, you know, on Lake Winnebago, there's 250-pound sturgeon, which is, you know, pretty scary. And if you when you see them milk them in the spring, you're amazed at the, you know, the freshwater fish we do have in our system right here.
You know, another Gary sent us a note on Facebook along with a photo, and I should mention, if you've got some good fish photos, we'd love to see them. This photo, he caught a bass that is of a bass that it had a crayfish and a bird in its gullet, in its stomach, and also let's see, the next bass they had another bass they caught that had a mouse in its belly, and there were three turtles in the belly of about the size of a quarter. Three turtles about the size of a quarter in the belly of that same bass, the one with the mouse.
Well, especially when you're dealing with, you know, top of the line predator fish, where, you know, muskies and northern pike. I mean, they're, you know, they'll take about anything. I mean, there's the stories of, you know, baby ducks getting devoured and you know, snakes. About anything like that is fair game when you're talking about those, you know, top end predator fish.
Absolutely. You can join in, too. We're going to go to Andy next in Mount Hora, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Question about fishing or fish or maybe a good story to tell? Love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Andy in Mount Hora, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Gary.
Hi,
just so you know, I've been fishing for about 63 years.
Okay.
And I could tell you a lot of fishing stories, but I won't get into those. But I did want to talk about the mayfly hatch.
Yep.
The mayfly hatch is it's a mayfly, and it's called the Hexagenia lobata. And it's a mud burrower. It lives in the mud. And as it begins to turn into the adult stage, it swims up to the surface, sits on the surface, dries its wing, and flies off. Now, what you can do to catch fish in, at this time of year is to fish a mayfly pattern, a fly pattern. And because of, you don't want to use an actual fly, a pattern that a fly fisherman uses, what you want to tie is something with a yellow bottom and a brown top, and preferably made out of marabou, so it pulsates as you raise it up to the surface. So that should be a pretty decent way to catch them during the mayfly hatch.
Fully, thank you.
Ah, good tips. Thanks, Andy. I like that idea.
But like we said, you're matching the hatch as best you can.
Yep, exactly right, exactly right. Well, here's Jerry in Menasha with something. Hi, Jerry. Thanks
Hi,
for
Jerry.
Calling.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Appreciate the call.
I do a lot of, I love the Wolf River. That's my favorite area to fish, New London, Shiocton, and anywhere. But it seems like the water's awfully high. Can it be too high to actually, I mean, with all the rain and stuff, is it actually too high to fish?
Oh, it's possible. I mean, you know, fishing can get more difficult when you do have higher water. You got to realize it's usually, especially in a river where you do have a flow and a current, fish are going to move in tighter to shore. you know, they're going to move and try and get out of that current as much as they can. Because, you know, when they're in, if they're fighting the current without anything to block the, you know, block the flow, they're burning up calories and energy, which is, you know, they're going to be hungry then. So actually, it can be a good time to fish because your fish are burning, constantly burning up energy. But the main thing people don't do is fish shallow enough because when water is rising, it's like a common thing that people who hang around rivers will know. When the water goes up, you know, come in tight and fish right in the brush, fish right in the, you know, the shallows. Like in the springtime when we have our high water on the rivers, I'll go right into, you know, it, sometimes it might be a cornfield that's flooded over, you know, but anywhere, you know, fish are going to move in tight to get out of the flow. And when the water goes back down and recedes, then they'll move out to the, you know, the channel edge or to the first break line.
Okay, so with them being so hungry, do you think something like live bait or artificial, I mean, does it think it matters either way?
I think just for the average person to go out fishing, right now I would not recommend at least in most of the state minnows right now. Minnows are kind of, fish are biting more now on night crawlers and leeches are seem to be the bait right now. I would I think you're wasting your money by buying minnows. They're going to die on you early unless you have a very good aeration system. And it just seems that, you know, about this time of the year, the switchover goes to night crawlers and to leeches. And what I do with them is I'll try and pick out the nice, fattest. I like to have a night crawler like the size of my little finger and keep them cool. You can keep them on ice, but necessarily keep them cool. That'll keep them firm. Then you put them in the warmer water. You get so much more action out of a leech or a night crawler when they go from the cold to the warm that this usually attracts fish.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yes. Thanks, Jerry. Bill in Cross Plains. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I want to thank Gary publicly for his continued support of our local NWTF chapter, the Black Earth chapter. He
Bill
promotes
Netting.
Our annual youth event every year. On Saturday morning, he makes sure that we get the public announcement, and our participation averages somewhere between 65 and 80 youth every year.
That's
this
great.
This year will be our 13th.
Is this Colonel Bill?
Yes.
Bill's has a great place out in the Black Earth Cross Plains area, and he allows all kinds of different organizations, women's group, men's group, to use the facilities for fishing and for various outdoor activities. He's got a beautiful place. And I've caught some really nice rainbow trout through the ice.
I know you have. I know you have.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Well, I've got a fish story for you, too, Gary.
Okay,
all right.
We'd love to hear it.
I was fishing with Pete Olson up on Boulder Lake in the fall several years ago, and in the morning I caught a musky 38-incher on a topwater artificial bait. We tagged it and released it, as Pete likes to do.
Yep.
And the next morning we were out fishing in just about the same area. We put out a couple of suckers, and we had a musky pick up a sucker. Never got a hook in it, but he refused to let go of the sucker. We got him up, got him in the net, and it was the same muskie we had caught the day before.
I know some friends in northern Wisconsin who do the same. They'll either notch a fish or they'll put on their own tags on them. And very often, muskies will stay around the same area. You know, they will not migrate as much as like a walleye could move miles in a day. Even crappies end up moving around a lot. But muskies are kind of territorial.
Yeah, Ashley, that's great story.
Well, Pete records every muskie he's ever caught, and he tags them, and he's had recaptures on one fish. I think his record is catching the same fish four times, and the growth, he keeps track of the growth in the fish every time he records it. He's a classic muskie fisherman.
Yeah, you know, Pete's caught plenty of muskies.
Yeah, he sure has.
Were you guys out row trolling?
Pardon?
Were you row trolling or just normal fishing?
We're just normal fishing. That's a no troll lake.
Okay, but I'm just saying they have he has a row troller now that a lot of people are using and going back to like they did in the old days.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. His son-in-law builds row trollers.
Yep, everyone's building them now.
Yeah, that's very cool. Bill, thank you so much
for calling.
And Dave in Augusta. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Oh, you know, I couldn't resist not calling into this show. both of you guys are great fishermen. I got to, speaking of muskies, Larry, I was fishing with my brother a couple of years ago in northern Wisconsin and fishing with one of my homemade globes. And we're just talking. It was midday, and I just throw it out. You know, you don't see a fish for a while, you kind of lose interest a little bit. You kind of go through the motions. And I was casting out, I was retrieving my globe, you know, bloop, 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 bloop in the water.
Yep.
And I happened to look down, and there was about a 48-inch muskie with his head completely out of the water, with his head open, right behind my bait. And I tell you what, to all the fishermen out there who have never seen that, it is really a heart-stopping experience.
That's the wonderful thing. That's the nice thing.
Oh, my God. It really is. And, of course, I stopped. I was so shocked to see it, and I stopped, and the muskie swam away. But that's one of my – I've got plenty of stories, but that's the only one I'm going to share with you today.
That's one of the wonderful things about using topwater baits, because you do get a chance to see that fish more, you know, up close and, you know, and really at you. And there's nothing like having an explosion, you know, close to the boat from a muskie on a top water.
Oh.
Thank you, folks.
Yeah, Dave, thanks. And Dave, by the way, makes some really nice baits. He makes some really great baits. I've got one of them. And it's a dandy. But it is a surface bait. You've got that kind of V in the water from the surface bait, and then you're watching, and suddenly comes another V.
But, Larry, how many baits can you have?
I've got three tackle boxes full, and these are large tackle boxes. This is musky baits alone. And then I've got about a five-gallon pail that's full. You can never have enough.
I have a minor strung up in my garage on piano wire around, and I don't know how many hundreds there are. But any time I've ever, it's kind of a standard joke with some of the guys that I've fished tournaments with, is that you know, you figure you have everything, but then you go and you end up to a tournament, and there's always a bait you don't have that you have to get.
Yeah. Exactly right. I've been guilty of that many a time myself. Well, Bruce in Sheboygan has something. Let's go there. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling.
Good afternoon, gents. Wanted to share a nice little story, or maybe two. I grew up in northern New York, right on the St. Lawrence River Valley.
Yeah.
And we had a small creek, two different creeks, about three-quarters of a mile down the road, either direction from my home. And as a child, I used to spend hours upon hours catching bullheads and muskies and walleyes and northern pike and bass and all kinds of fish out of these two little streams as well as the St. Lawrence River. My grandfather and some of my great uncles would hand carve their own wooden plugs. And I had one that was very dear to me that my grandpa had made, that I caught so many pike on and several muskies that it was actually scarred from the teeth.
Yep.
And then one day I was out fishing with my brother, and I went to cast, and the line got snagged inside my reel. The line snapped, and I watched that beautiful little plug go into the river, and it just kind of floated on past me, and I couldn't get out to get it. But I love to take kids. I heard some of the other gentlemen talking about, you know, taking young folks out to go fishing. It is such a wonderful thing to even start them with a little Snoopy pole and just take them anywhere that you know they're going to catch a fish. Not too long ago, I took my two grandkids over to a small trout pond where I knew they were guaranteed to catch fish. And with their little Snoopy poles, they just squealed. It was the most wonderful sound when they hooked into those fish.
That's what people have to realize, that they, like you said, it's, you know, just to have a little action or to have something pulling on their rod. And the thing that people have to realize, that if fishing is relatively, I mean, you can get outfitted and have a rod and reel and everything you need for a very minimal sum. It's not an expensive sport. And after that, you know, using live bait and stuff like that, go out to any schoolyard after a rain, and you can get all the night crawlers you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Great stories, Bruce. Thanks a lot for calling. And when you get those bird nests we in your line, we always call those professional overthrows.
Mm-hmm. We call them cluster something.
There you go. Bob in Madison, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Jerry. I'm one of those guys who hasn't fished for like 40 years, and I just bought a fishing license. And I like going up to Devil's Lake, and I was wondering if I'm going to go in there in a couple of days here, and I was wondering if you could tell me how to get started fishing.
Devil's Lake is a good one, and I know it very, very well. Devil's Lake, first of all, is a no outboard motor lake, so you're going to be using either an electric motor or drifting or anchoring up. But the best thing in Devil's Lake is there right now, you can use minnows, and minnows or leeches I would recommend. It's stocked by the DNR with trout, and you know, I think your minimum trout there is 6 or 7 inches. But the best thing to do is just to drift across the main basin of the lake, depending on which way the wind is going, you know, either north or south there, how the lake runs, go that way with it. And basically just a plain hook, a minnow, a split shot, and even sometimes I don't even use a split shot. I'll just cast it out, cast the minnow and the hook out and let it sink, and usually before that gets done, you have 30, 40 feet of water in the main basin there. But the thermocline is most of your fish are in the upper 20. But before that minnow drifts down too far, usually you're going to get a hit. And you also could go out there if you want, go out in a little deeper water and anchor up and just use a slip bobber and a minnow, and that'll work too. And, you know, Devil's Lake is a lake when we kind of get the August doldrums, when fishing isn't too good too much in too many places and it's hard to get a bite. That's where I usually go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. It's a good lake with a lot of fish in that lake.
Oh, there's a lot. Beside the trout, there's northern pike in there. There's both species of bass. There's panfish. You'll have a good time. And then the thing about it, even though Devil's Lake gets over 1 million visitors a year, I've been there on the 4th of July and only have 3 or 4 people be out there fishing.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I see that as well. Well, again, Bob, thank you so much. An email question from Greg. How does the number of sport fish available today in northern Wisconsin waters like the Flambeau compared to 20, 30 years ago? That's a hard one to say.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, all I know is that the DNR has done a real good job of all our fish hatcheries. A lot of them have been, like, I know Wild Rose, they just got done redoing, and a lot of them have been, you know, refurbished. And we do a very good job. I mean, Wisconsin probably has a good job of stocking fish and making sure there's reproduction as anywhere in the Midwest or anywhere in the country. And I know that if you probably go on a website, you can see what the different stocking numbers are, you know, at various lakes. So, I mean, all this is public record. And depending on what county you go in, I would just talk to the biologist there, and they can give you numbers exactly, and they can tell you probably as far back. But all I know is that you know, it seems to me that fishing has gotten maybe even a little bit better. I think fishing is better than it probably was, because, you know, the scientific and the technical data and what we do is so much. There's so much more being done.
Yep.
And, you know,
there we are. And boy, Gary, it's always fun. I hope we have a chance to talk again soon. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
Thank you so much. Gary Engberg, I tell you what, go to he's got a great blog at GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. GaryEngbergOutdoors.com. He does tournament angler, but he's also a fishing guide. And I tell you, the guy's got, he's got a story or two to tell you while you're out there fishing with him. That is for sure. You never a dull moment when he's around. Oh, thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about a book that describes a way of healing without surgery. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.